Blog Talk Radio. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Fire Talk. And for this edition, I am your host, David Little Eagle, covering for Russ Letica. And with me is my co-host and producer, Nell Cole.
Welcome.
Many topics are black and white. They can say yes or no. They can say maybe. But when it's maybe, it ceases to be black and white and becomes gray. Well, that's going to be the show for today. We're going to have a topic that is gray. It has its pros and cons, and it has its many questions. And we're going to try to answer some of those questions. Well, we're going to give it our best shot. On today's show, we have a very, very special guest. It's my bro, and his name is Dr. Alexander Miscavige. He is a PhD, has a PhD in psychology, and has 40 years counseling experience. And I want to welcome at this time my bro, Alex Miscavige. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Nell. I appreciate being here. Looking forward to the show. I think we're going to say some good and important things here.
Me too. So what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, is just start off with the baseline concept of what the religious definition of forgiveness is, and then we'll kind of expand to whatever direction that it takes us.
Yeah, I thought that we should limit the conversation a little bit, because if we talk about forgiveness, you know, it can mean many, many things.
Okay.
In preparing for the show, what I thought about is the kind of forgiveness for someone who has constantly abused you, or a group of people that have constantly abused you. You know, we don't want to talk about the person who, you know, bumps into you and says, excuse me, you know, of course you're going to forgive
right.
that guy. You know, we're talking about the kind of person that, you know, steals your money, beats you up constantly.
And
you forgive them and they have a honeymoon period and then they abuse you again. So we're really talking about, abusers. In preparing for the show, I also looked up the definition of forgiveness. I went to the Webster's Dictionary. I figured it was the most commonly accepted. And what it said forgiveness is concluding resentment, indignation, or anger of a perceived offense, difference, or mistake, and ceasing demanding punishment or restitution. Now, the interesting thing I found in the definition is that in the West, we make little distinction between human and divine forgiveness. That is, we forgive and God forgives us. There are even many sayings that, you know, that bring that to mind, to err is human and to forgive is divine.
Right.
What I found is that Christianity really stresses the importance of forgiveness, showing mercy, and loving one's enemy. There's a lot of examples. If you read the Gospels, this is the parable of the prodigal son, that is the son who goes away and lives the high life, and there's another son who stays home and takes care of things. And when the prodigal son comes back, he's treated better than the son who stayed and always did the right thing. That always struck me as being kind of a little weird.
Yeah.
Seems to me if somebody stayed with me and was loyal to me, I'd treat them pretty well. But there are other examples that go from Jesus of Nazareth. There's the whole idea of turning the other cheek. In the Sermon of the Mount and the Beatitudes, which are blessed are the, there's the blessed are the merciful, you know, the people who do forgive, because they'll be shown mercy. There's an idea that if you don't forgive other people, then God is not going to forgive you.
Right.
That is sort of the undercurrent of all of this. Just taking it back, you know, bringing it back to the Gospels to find some other examples of how important forgiveness is. The Apostle Peter once asked Jesus how many times he should forgive his brother, and he said, is 7 times enough? And Jesus said, 70 times 7. And, you know, we've got the admonition. I believe it comes from the Old Testament. I'm not a believer in Christianity. I'm not a biblical scholar. But there's a judge not lest ye be judged. Once again, God isn't going to forgive you. And, of course, on the cross, Jesus said, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do.
Right.
And now, the point I think that we have to, that a good point to jump off the discussion is, does or can anyone really follow these principles? Do we really live this way in this Christian society that we're being forced to follow the precepts of? It's human nature to want revenge and retribution, and we can't go around just doing that. But do we really have to forgive? I know that there's a lot of guilt around not forgiving. One is pressured to forgive. In the kind of therapy I do, we call forgiveness a should statement. In other words, you should forgive. There's something wrong with you
right.
if you don't forgive. So I thought that might be a good place for us to start talking about this topic.
Absolutely. David, do you have anything you wanted to say first? Or?
If I start, you may have to kick me out of the room. Oh, sorry. Am I here? I was thinking about that statement that Alex had mentioned before. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, which implies ignorance. I personally do not believe that anybody who goes out to hurt people are ignorant of their actions. I do not believe that for 1 minute. So, I'm shooting right into the pool here.
you think the Romans that are nailing this guy to a cross and slapping him around and stuff didn't really know what they were doing?
Yeah, they knew. Maybe the implied thing is they don't know who they're killing, like it isn't a common man. But essence of forgiveness, what difference does it make whether it's the Son of God or a common man, if the theory is correct?
I had down the defenders do know what they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are a lot of factors involved there, right, Alex? I mean, you know, it's hard to pinpoint exactly who he's talking about. Because if you talk about a cultural setting, the Romans were just carrying out what their political system told them to. It was a capital punishment. You know, it was in the Roman law to execute someone for whatever reason. I mean, you know, it says that he had two thieves hanging on either side. So, you know, it was a pretty serious punishment. But, you know, there are other theories behind who he was talking about. I mean, you know, when they were, the way they treated him toward the end, I mean, you know, they were saying, oh, crucify this guy. Crucify him, damn it. Crucify him. they knew what they were doing. They knew what was going on. And I agree with you now that it was the implication. And now let me explain something. I'm not a biblical scholar either, but the New Testament, the Gospels themselves, were written anywhere between 30 and 60 years after Jesus lived and died. So to say, oh, Jesus said this, is essentially historically fallacious. You know, we don't know if he said it or not.
We really don't know what Jesus said, but again, this is the stuff that's in the gospel. This is the stuff that the Christian faith believes, and this is the kind of stuff that's being kind of forced on our society as a whole regarding forgiveness.
Right, right, exactly.
And my point is that the Christians themselves don't forgive.
No, they do not. Can we break down the Christian concept a little bit more to the different pieces that you've seen in your work?
Sure.
The guilt, the shame, and the different pieces that the judgment, the timelines that people feel like they're put under to forgive, even though they're not ready. Those different factors.
So I'll talk about what I know, and again, please jump in if you want to add something or you don't agree with something. But, you know, pretty much the idea is that one should forgive, and somehow it's healthy to forgive. As a matter of fact, there are certain...
Alex, you're kind of far away. Can you talk closer to the phone? Wait a minute. We're having difficulty hearing you. Yeah, Alex, are you there? You know, he seems to be like breaking up to where he can't hear. So what I'm gonna do is disconnect him where he'll know, and then he'll call back in.
All right, this is a major conspiracy, ladies and gentlemen.
It is a major conspiracy. So what are you seeing? Yeah, I'm sure he'll call right back in. But what have you seen as far as the forced forgiveness that society puts on people? What have you seen?
I on a personal level, somebody had done something to me. I'm not going to go into details. I'm not going to mention names. I don't want to embarrass anybody. But I was seriously not just offended, but I was hurt in a process that could have killed me. That's how serious it was.
Wow.
And then on, this person would tell me, I have nothing against you. And I'm essentially telling them, get away from me or I'll beat the living shit out of you.
Right.
It's amazing how people can offend you and then expect you to forgive them. And that's why I was talking about the ignorance factor. Now, they go out to hurt you and they say, well, you're not acting Christian-like here.
Right.
You
or
know,
a good Christian would forgive me.
Yeah. Right.
It's like... But I always worry as soon as they start telling me what a good Christian would do. Because, you know, what about humanity? What about, regardless of Christian, non-Christian, whatever, there's a baseline humanity and a way to treat your fellow human beings. And people go outside that scope. And then they want to throw the Christian piece back in as some kind of get-out-of-jail-free card for their behavior.
I mean that's the problem with the concept of forgiveness as we see it in a religious light. In that, I mean, if you think about it, the very religion that teaches forgiveness, the very religion that says, you can't be forgiven unless you forgive, are the very ones that cause the major problems throughout the world. And I'm sorry to say it, but it's true.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
When we talk about child abuse and we talk about child abductions and we talk about murders in their residential schools, when we talk about land thefts and we talk about entire societies and cultures being wiped out in the name of God, you know, it sheds a new light on the concept of forgiveness. You know,
right.
The very people that teach us to forgive are the biggest offenders sometimes. Not all. You know, I want to be fair about this now, you know.
Right, absolutely.
There are people who do... They do believe in Jesus. They believe in God, and you know, by graciousness, they are good people. But when you're
right.
talking about the institution of Christianity, there you are. We had lost two hours. They had
confirmed.
He's still breaking up.
Are you Alex? Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah.
Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay,
we had lost you there. All right.
Yeah, you started breaking up and getting distant. So go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, we thought you were abducted there for a minute, Alex. Go ahead. You were talking about the concept of forgiveness, and you got cut off by extraterrestrial. No, wait a minute. Wrong show. Sorry. You were cut off. What were you saying about forgiveness, Alex, and the concept that's forced upon us?
What I'm saying is it becomes a should statement, and should statements pressure us.
Okay.
The whole idea is that we should do things one specific way. I mean, you know, it's really just an old, for those of us that are indigenous people, it's the old thing. They're taking away our ways and expecting us to do things in another way.
Right.
You know, why should I forgive? Will I really feel better? Not necessarily. I have my own way of dealing with it. But the idea is that you get this, well, if you don't forgive, and then there's sort of the thing in the back that God isn't going to forgive you. Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I believe in a Christian God. But I'm not sure if I want his forgiveness.
Uh-huh.
And if you're doing something based on seeking some kind of reward, then is that a valid gesture that you're doing? Because it's supposed to be an act of letting go and embracing somebody for all their faults and still accepting it. But you're saying, I'm only really doing it so that I can get to heaven. But if I didn't have that heaven piece, boy, you would be paying right now. And to me, that doesn't feel right. You know?
Well, it's more fear-based, or I'll end up in hell.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you can forgive based on fear. It's just more abuse. And
right.
That's the problem. That's the problem with the should stuff. It's more abuse.
Right. It keeps victims victimized because they don't feel like they have a right to stand up against somebody who has wronged them and say, no, I don't forgive you. What you did was unacceptable, and I do not want you in my life whatsoever. But these concepts and the society around them forces them to accept the abuser back in because it's the Christian thing to do to keep trying. And all it does is re-victimize the person.
Particularly if the abuser is a family member.
Yes, exactly. And that's a whole subject in itself of how you deal with abuser who is a family member when everybody else in the family seems to have forgiven, and you're that standout. And I've been there, believe me, I've been there, and it is not an easy road because they want it settled, and they don't really care whether you get any internal satisfaction from it. They just want the word spoken so that they can go back to the illusion that everybody's fine.
Yeah, it's
and
all
that
about
pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
It's never
it's all about the illusion.
Alex, what do you think? It's not about the offended. It's about the offender. It's a panacea to make the offender feel better.
It's a policy to make the offender feel better and also the people around the offender. I mean, we don't like conflict, particularly
right.
in psychological settings and family settings. You know, we want everybody to be happy. We want everything to be nice. But what we're doing, and, you know, Nell and I talked about this a little bit in a pre-conversation, is we're setting up codependencies. This person can do the same thing over and over to me, and I'm obligated to forgive him. So therefore, what I'm doing is I'm allowing him to continue to do whatever abuse and whatever offense he is doing.
Right. And there's no accountability for the behavior because everybody around is pressuring you. So you can't even ask the things that you want to ask to determine whether you can even stomach the concept of forgiving that person, depending on the severity of what they did. But you don't get that option. You have to just swallow it once again and say, okay, I'll forgive them. But in reality, that's just adding another layer of abuse onto what you're already carrying.
Exactly.
So, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. I just wanted to point something out. When Jesus forgave, I'm speaking kind of hypothetically, or I'm sorry, theoretically.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus forgave, right? He said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Now, I've heard countless sermons that Jesus was not only speaking about the people present at his crucifixion, at his execution, but speaking about future generations. And yet, when you read farther down the line in the New Testament, Jesus then suddenly says, "I'm coming back to kick your ass."
Yeah, and it's funny, in one chapter he's forgiving, and in the next one there's plagues and everything else. So which one is it? Is he a forgiving God, or is he one that sends plagues and everything?
Well, Christians go back and forth between the Old Testament and the New Testament. I think the Old Testament's the one that has the plagues and all that kind of stuff. But even in the New Testament, Jesus says, if I'm the way, you don't believe in me, you're going to go to the lake of fire. You're going to burn.
Right.
What kind of a forgiving God is that?
Yeah,
but
no pressure.
You could be a saintly person. You could do everything right. You could give to charity. You know, you could,
right.
You could be the kindest. But if you don't say, well, Jesus Christ is my personal savior, you're going to burn for eternity.
Right.
So there's a lot of hypocrisy in them. And then there are the Christians who say, well, you know, Jesus forgave me. You can say what you want to, but I know Jesus has forgiven me.
Right.
Well, I usually do is I ask for a written note from Jesus. I say, you know, I want a written note from Jesus, and I want a counter signed by Jehovah.
Yeah. All right, exactly. I want a promissory note now.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a preacher once, speaking about the Bible, Alex, said,
yeah,
if you want to know the personality of God, now, are our listeners sitting down? I hope you're sitting down. Nell, are you sitting down? Alex, are you sitting down?
I am.
I'm sitting down. He said, "You want to know the okay? Watch out now. If you want to know the personality of God, the Bible reveals the personality of God. And as I'm reading from Genesis to Revelation, God is saying, I love my creation. You bunch of bastards, you sinned against me. I'm gonna." Kill you. And then he says,
yeah,
but I still love you. But I'm still going to kill you. You sinned against me. So, my mind, as I'm listening to this sermon, I'm going, oh, my God, they're worshiping a psychopath.
Homophobic.
Yeah. Don't turn the page in the Bible, because you may get the one that hates you. So stay, when you hit the love part, just stay there. Don't read any further.
Now, when you were saying that, there was a scene in the first Batman movie that had Michael Keaton as Batman and Jack Nicholson as the Joker, where the Joker's talking to someone and he says, "What do you think, Develli? Your friends aren't bad guys. Should I kill them now?" "All right, well, you're a treacherous bastard, Develli." That's the kind of God that you kind of get in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Jesus isn't so adamant about it, but he makes it pretty clear. You don't believe in me, you know, you're going to go to hell.
Yeah, it's not going to go well.
The other thing about Jesus is that, you know, Jesus wasn't even necessarily confined until 400 AD. They had this Council of Nicaea, where they basically took all the books, all the holy books of Christianity and Judaism, and they went through them. And they went through them with an eye, they say, to make the faith more coherent, better. Actually, they went through them to make people better Roman citizens. And they threw out the books that were very, very mystical. They threw out the books that were forgiving. And they kept in the books that, you know, kept people good Roman citizens.
Oh, we're losing him again.
Yeah, let's see if he does seem to be breaking up again. So what I'm going to do is the same thing I did. Alex,
yeah,
are you there?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, there you are.
Yeah,
okay. Don't move around because we're losing your connection back and forth.
Okay.
Okay.
But
there.
We forgive you. We forgive you, Alex. We forgive
you. Yeah,
you
are forgiven. Maybe. I'm not sure.
I was forgiven. I kicked myself in the ass. Actually, that's a mistake. That kind of thing should be forgiven. But if I was just like, you know what I mean? I was just turning the phone off and turning it on and stuff like that. That shouldn't be forgiven because I would know what I was doing, and I was doing it with malicious intent.
Exactly.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I would like to segue into that piece of what in your practice have you seen that would tell you not to forgive a person? Not necessarily the act, but what signs should people look for to show that a person really isn't deserving, for lack of a better word, of forgiveness?
Well, I sort of back to stuff that are in the self-help fellowships, the ones to, like Al-Anon and Nar-Anon. And what they say is that the person needs to take responsibility for his actions, kind of apologize, and then never do it again. That doesn't mean you get a three-month reprieve. That doesn't mean you do it in a different form. It means you never, ever do it again. And if you do it again, people leave you. Or they... kick you out of their lives or whatever they need to do. I've worked with a lot of bad men, and I've worked with a lot of kids that have been abused. And usually it's a matter of getting the woman out from the influence of the abuser. And those guys are really sick with narcissists and very often sociopathic. And the person has to take some power back and say, I'm not going to let this person influence my life anymore. Because he or she is the crazy one. I'm not the crazy one.
Right. Well,
don't they refer to those as alternate patients or where, you're seeing somebody for counseling, but they're not the ones with the problem. It's the family.
Usually the person who comes into counseling, although this is, this is my rule of thumb anyway, the person who comes into counseling is the healthiest person.
Right.
Very often, who gets kicked out of the family, nobody wants to have anything to do with. He's the one who sees the lie and says the lie. So he's usually the healthiest person in the family.
Uh-huh, I'm the healthiest person in the family then.
Yeah.
Nice.
I've heard that
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy, man. That's
well,
what do you call it when somebody believes something, and then he truly believes something that is not real, has no basis in reality, we call it a delusion. Families suffer from delusion. Uncle Charlie is such a nice guy, but he drinks like hell and he beats his wife, and his kids are afraid of him.
Exactly.
Those people who see that Uncle Charlie is a real a bastard under it all, a malicious guy, a drinker, and an abuser, they're the healthy ones.
Right. And that's nothing's harder than being in a group of family members who are seeing that person, that bastard, as the nicest guy, and you literally are going like, am I losing my mind? How in the world are they interpreting that behavior and matching it with those words? And yet, then that's when the concept of forgiveness is thrown in, too, because they think that, well, obviously you see who they are, but you need to still rise above and forgive them. And that's kind of where I drew my line, was like, no, that's not going to happen. When they stop doing their behavior, when they stop coming at us, when they stop making us wake up every day miserable that they're here in the house, being the way they are, then we can possibly think about it. But there has to be a shift in spirit. There has to be some recognition of the behavior and something in place to prevent that behavior from ever happening again. and until all those things are on the table, then there's no reason to have any conversation about forgiveness. And people want to jump right to that end conversation of, all right, well, you're sorry, I'm sorry too. But they didn't do any of the work, so there's nothing in place to prevent it from stopping it from happening again.
Well, I see that. There be people trying to make nice real quick. I say, well, what are you sorry for?
Right.
You got to own what you're sorry for. And very often, you're sorry for being a victim. I'm sorry that I let you abuse me in this way. But the other person has to go, well, you know, I'm sorry I hit you. I'm sorry I financially deprived you. You know, I'm sorry for whatever I did. I'm sorry I took away the Black Hills and didn't give them back, you know.
Right.
And until they're sorry and actually give them back and make that restitution, there's no reason to forgive them.
Wow.
One thing I would like to touch on briefly is the way somebody will manipulate somebody into saying they forgive them, like they'll blame them for it. Well, if you weren't doing that, then I would have never gotten angry. And, you know, where they pass it on and twist it around to where the person ends up actually thinking they're the ones that caused the problem. So can you speak of that at all, the different things, signs that people may want to watch for?
Well, sure. I mean, when someone says you made me, you know, basically you made me beat you up.
Right.
Or you made me abuse you. What they're really doing is rationalizing it. They're blaming the victim. No one makes someone smack them. You know,
right.
No one makes someone do anything towards them. I mean, that's really the hallmark of somebody who's an abuser. That's telling you that they feel justified in doing whatever the abuse is.
Right.
And then you get that from the family, too. I mean, you know, family will say, well, you remember when you were a little kid and your cousin Joe, who, you know, who just... you know, embezzled $10,000 from you or something. Remember when, you know, you skinned your knee and he brought you home and his car.
Yeah, or he took you fishing or something, and you're like, okay, we went fishing. It wasn't to the mountains. We didn't see God or anything. We just went fishing.
it's not equitable. You know? The point is it's not equitable. You got to deal with the deed. And people throw up a lot of camouflage. They throw up a lot of irrelevant stuff to make you, you know, kind of go back to the value of forgive and forget.
Right, because you're exhausted trying to figure out the truth of it because they twisted it so far that you can't even figure out what the original argument was.
Yeah, and they're wanting you to be a chump and a victim. I mean, I think that basically you have to stick with the original thing. All well and good this happened. All well and good you feel this way or you think that way. Are you going to continue doing that? And what are you going to do instead?
Right. I've actually go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I've actually had to write down my one original statement of what happened and watch them twist and turn the conversation and me go like, I refuse to speak about any other subject but this one statement. Once we've spoken about this statement, then we can move on to the other things that you're listing. But we are not moving until we are having this one specific conversation about why you did this. And that just short-circuits their whole, they hate it. That's usually when they get angry and slam the door and I'm not going to be psychoanalyzed and blah, blah. And they just throw everything up and leave because they know that they've been had. And those people deserve no forgiveness, in my book.
It boils down to power. Actually, there's a term for people, you know, taking the one issue and then throwing in a lot of. They're trying to redefine what's important. They're trying to define reality for you, and it's called redefining. And I tell them, I'm not going to let you, you know, redefine this issue from blah blah blah. And you know, you just got to kind of keep it in mind. And, you know, it boils down to who's got the power. And they want to take the power away from you. They want to show you that you're actually worse than they are, and therefore they're justified in doing whatever they did to you.
Right. I've even seen people threaten suicide as a way to make the argument end and the forgiveness come quicker. They use suicide as a tool to do that. Like, God, I'm just so upset about talking about this, and I just can't keep doing it. If you're not going to forgive me, just forget it. Then I'll just, and next thing you know, you feel guilty, and you're like, I don't want to cost that person their life. So you forgive, even though nothing happened to make that forgiveness necessary.
I usually say that's acceptable restitution.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I didn't see that one coming.
I did.
I knew it.
Get the words out of my mouth.
You threw me a little on that one. I liked it though, but
you've got to be tough minded with people that are going to try to abuse
yeah.
you, try to steal. Yeah.
You
and
do.
They're trying to steal who you are. They're trying to steal
right.
your sense of reality and put their own sense of reality into you. And if you do that,
right.
it's just crazy, man. You're
right.
weak, you're a victim. You don't know what is real.
And their actions and their words have to match. That you have to keep that level of accountability. And that's extremely hard sometimes because you wish with all your heart that their actions were saying something else. But you have to look and be willing to see what really exists in order to keep
right.
yourself protected and safe. And that's where the trickster lies, is how willing are you to see the truth? How invested are you in that person being something other than what they really are? Because that's where they hide.
The problem is people give you two messages. People give you two true messages. It's when they give you conflicting messages.
Right.
I love you, but I'm smacking you in the head. That's not,
right.
those aren't compatible messages. I love you and I'm kissing you. That's a compatible, message. That's congruent.
Right. Or I love you and therefore I'm not jeopardizing us financially. Or, I'm increasing our quality of life together. I'm not decreasing it. When you go to bed at night, you're not turning away from me in silence because of something I said that cut you deep. It's those small little things that tell you the truth of it, and you have to be willing to look at them. But if all the things really do exist and a person's spirit has shifted and they're sitting in front of you and you're looking at them and you can tell mentally that they finally, the light came on and they get it and they have deep remorse for what they did, they want to in some way make up for it, in those kind of conversations, I have absolutely no problem talking about forgiveness, but that doesn't mean I owe them anything. Once they do the original act, it's all my choice whether I forgive or not forgive. And a person should never pressure me into it, give me any preset timeline. There should be no guilt. It should be an open conversation of when you're ready to forgive, it would be a great gift for me if you did. But I understand that you don't want to, if you don't want to. That's the only time I'll even listen to it.
Alex, no, the good points. No, Alex, let me ask you a question. And because we opened the discussion on the call it the religious perspective of forgiveness. Okay, all right. Let's not coddle here. We were talking about the Christian concept of forgiveness. In your
right.
work, have you dealt with many cases of abused people who grew up in a religious home where they were faced with this horror?
Many people. I'll give you an example. Two examples. Probably shouldn't. I'll name religions even. I mean, you have a lot of abuse goes on in the Amish. There's a lot of child abuse goes on in the
really?
Amish. And they're very, everybody thinks that they're wonderful people, they're perfect people, but they do a lot of abuse, and a lot of kids leave because they have been abused.
That's true.
And even in Mormon religion, you see a lot of physical abuse. You see a lot of, although it's against the law, you see a lot of child brides who really have been denied their childhood. And, that's an example of sort of institutional abuse.
Wow.
The religion abuses these people.
Right.
Well, what is healthy forgiveness to you then? What is, what should exist? What is it, what should it look like?
For me, there are people in my life I have forgiven. None of them are alive, however. I usually forgive someone who's dead and doesn't have the opportunity to make amends. I don't know if it's healthy or not. I'm not. I don't consider myself a Christian, so I sort of have a spiritual sense. And I forgive not for the other person, but I forgive for myself. I choose not about that person. I choose not to think about that particular act. And very often, if I think about that act, I start thinking about murderous retribution. You know. I'm better off if I don't think about that act. You know, that's really suppression. Until I can kind of wrap my head around, okay, that happened. I need some distance from this, and it's not going to happen again. Until I've built the skill in myself to recognize, that's not going to happen again. I'm not a kid, or I'm not as naive as I was, or I've made myself financially independent, or whatever I do. So again, for me, I think that the whole idea of letting go of the anger, particularly if someone has done massive amounts of abuse to you. I'm not talking about, just making a mistake. I know that, for example, when I was raising my daughter, I slapped her twice, and only twice that was something I hope she forgives me about. That I did more for me than for her. That was to maintain the control of the relationship. And I hope she for that. But I'm talking about someone who looks at a kid and would just as soon kick their eyes out, than treat them lovingly. That kind of person should not be forgiven.
Well, now that you mention it, Alex, I want to make a public announcement because we are about to celebrate Columbus Day. And posthumously, I'd like to say, Christopher Columbus, I forgive you. Not. Okay, let's continue the conversation.
I was about to say, what?
Gotcha.
You put on Facebook celebrate Columbus Day by going into somebody else's house and telling them it's yours.
Exactly. It.
Pretty much what he did.
Well, Alex, we're talking about forgiving the beast here, okay?
Right.
And I think it's an important topic to talk about because you are in day, right? And you are of the Apache people, and we're both natives here, and they talk about the glories of Columbus Day, but people need to know that from day one in 1492, there has been a continued process of abuses perpetrated against the indigenous people of Turtle Island that, we can't back down and say, it's okay. Because, the abuses continue.
Right.
Continue. And there are people in this world who they continue a process of abusing someone. And when they're asked, you were talking about that personality, or Nell, you had brought it up, the person that says, well, if you hadn't done this, I wouldn't have done that. And we get that shit, don't we?
You get over with your ancestors. I just recently wrote on one of the blogs there. What would you do if somebody annihilated most of your ancestors and left you a second class citizen even today? How would you feel about that person? Would you have a national holiday dedicated to him or her?
No, that's the truth of it. Try asking our friends in the Jewish community. Would you celebrate Hitler Day? just to ask the question is an undeniable faux pas. It's a slap in the face to our Jewish friends.
Right.
You know, so
right.
Just to celebrate, to acknowledge this asshole. Oh, did I say that? Oh yes, I did.
Mm-hmm.
To ask us. You talk about forgiveness, but you know what? Screw that. You know, you can't. They continue the process. They haven't changed their processes. So
right.
You know, in psychologically speaking, would you agree, Alex? It would not be healthy to forgive a history that continues.
Well, I mean,
right.
You know, if the history is like the dysfunctional families we talked about, it was written by the victors, and it was written to perpetrate a delusion, and we're supposed to buy the delusion. No one asks about, you know, our history. Now more and more of that is coming up. I take it a step further back, because a lot of the stuff that Columbus did came out of a papal bull written by the Pope a few years before that. It basically said to treat unchristians like they were witches, to burn them, to exploit them, to use them for labor, to take whatever they had. So it was really a sanctioned thing. Columbus was doing what his culture and what his church called for. And at the same time, in 1492, when Columbus landed in Hispaniola, the Jews were kicked out of Spain. They were kicked out of Spain, and if you remained a Jew after that in Spain, they executed you. They burned you alive.
Right. Right.
But yeah, they want forgiveness. How do you you can't forgive until they stop coming, and there's an enormous amount of time and understanding and re-education and a clear path of how this won't go forward into the next generation. Until that, forgiveness shouldn't be on the table. But they attach checks to forgiveness because they're like, I don't really want to do the work to be forgiven. I just want you to shut up, so here's the check. And a public apology and a check. But I really don't want to hear your stories or anything else. I'll give you 5 minutes because of photo ops or whatever so that you can tell your lifelong story in 5 minutes. Then I'll determine how much that's worth. And here's the check. Now go away.
You can't forgive someone who does not acknowledge that he or she has done anything wrong.
Right.
I'm sorry. There's just no way.
Nope.
And it also holds your people in such low regard. Like I recall reading on one of these Columbus sites, you know, on Facebook, you know, somebody said, I guess it wasn't Columbus site. It was the Indian Ten Commandments, and someone said that the Indian Ten Commandments should include, build casinos, treat your elders badly, which of course is something we wouldn't do, and die young of liver failure. I mean, that is just, you know, the rankest kind of bias and prejudice. And that's the kind of ways that I think we're still looked at. I mean, I talk to a lot of people that say, yeah, you guys got the casinos. Not all of us do. And as long as there are Native American children freezing and starving to death, as long as they don't have the educational opportunities, as long as the Aboriginal people are living on the worst land that the United States could give them, as long as the Black Hills still don't belong to the Sioux people, there's no need to forgive.
Well, how is forgiveness handled in the Native American community? I know each nation has their own concept, but is there a general thing that's different than the way that we do it?
Well, I know how I personally handle that. You know, if somebody comes at me saying, you know, you're Indian, right? Yeah. Well, you could call me that. Well, we're going to take your land, and we're going to take your house. We're going to rape your wife, and we're going to kill your children. They're going to get they're going to get the living shit beaten out of them. That's how I forgive. I'm sorry. Did I say that?
Yes, you did.
Oh,
but culturally, is there something different in that's kind of a different mindset or logic to forgiveness within y'all's culture?
I think the basis, you know, it's hard to forgive people. I know that from what I see, and again, I come from two very non-forgiving people, the Jesusians and the Mescalero. We forgive within our own, but the person had better make restitution, and the person had better be really, really sorry for what they did. Had better admit that they did it. You know, other than that, there is no forgiveness. We no longer, you know, have blood feuds, but that's only because the law won't allow it.
That's a good point, brother. You know, there was something I read once, and it haunted me after I read it, where I believe it was a Lakota brother who said, among our own peoples, we have ceremonies to be able to forgive offenses committed by other indigenous peoples of other nations. Now, he said, went on to say, we do not have any ceremonies to forgive what the whites have done to us, what the Europeans did to us. There is no ceremony because there was, for some reason, there was a difference in the actions that were perpetrated. The crimes that were perpetrated were very, very different. So we don't have any ceremony. So when you ask what our perceptions or concepts of forgiveness is, it's something that needs to, I believe it makes common sense that if both parties come together and the offending party, and you alluded to this, Nell, if the offending tribe or the offending party says, we were wrong and we want to make peace, we smoked the pipe together and we made peace.
Right.
But as far as the concept of forgiveness, Alex, I mean, what do you think, brother? You know, I mean, look, I have friends all over the world and I love them. And you know, in Germany, in England, in Ireland, I have wonderful
right.
friends here, and they're of all colors and all races. I love them, but when it comes to the governmental structure, the political structure, the corporate structures that continue to perpetrate crimes, there is no way I can offer smoke to forgive them. I just can't
right.
do it.
Well, I think a part of it is because it's done duplistically. It's done, you know, in a way where, you know, like I know a lot of the treaties that were done were expected to be time limited, where our people expected them to go on forever. The other thing
right.
was that the abuse continues. I mean, you can't
right.
forget them where the abuse continues.
Right, they're still coming.
Also, the offenses were just, Jews who forgive Nazis who were trying to commit genocide are crazy. I mean, what they tried to do to us was genocide. They killed the buffalo to get rid of our food source. They tried to kill all our people. They put us on the worst reservation so that we would starve to death. How do you forgive
right.
that?
Right.
You
know? Right. How do you forgive... The governmental corporate relations that go into Pine Ridge and Standing Rock and Cheyenne River and Rosebud and mine for uranium, drill for oil, poison the aquifers of these people, of our relatives on these reservations, the Dene, you know, Peabody Coal Mining Company, oh, I mentioned their name. Oh, forgive me.
You're
they,
forgiven.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. but you know they're on Dene land, and these people who had a wonderful, prosperous society are suddenly thrown into ghettos. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, hear us out here. You know, get over it, they tell us. This is all in the past. Ladies and gentlemen, it is not in the past.
Nope.
These people do not admit that they've done anything wrong. You cannot forgive them. I do not forgive Peabody. I do not forgive Cameco or Cameco, whatever they're called, mining for uranium on my Lakota relatives' land. I do not. I cannot forgive.
And the only consolation that we have is that they're doing it to their own people now as well.
Very sad.
I think that the American people are in a very, very bad place, and they're starting to get they're getting to be two classes of people, that 1% of people that are very, very rich and the 99% of everybody else.
Well, maybe that's what it takes to wake people up. Is until everybody suffers, then nobody, then they'll care. But if the majority of people are not suffering, then they'll be indifferent to somebody suffering. So, you know, it, maybe it's worth it. Maybe this is exactly what we need.
It looks like these kids that are on Wall Street and, you know, just basically blatantly and saying, look, this is the place all the misery in America comes from.
Yes, it does.
It really started with corporations. What were the corporations that started the, started the exploitation? Well, it starts with the church also, but the East India Corporation. They were the ones that came in, thought they'd buy and own everything.
Right.
It's corporations today that are doing these kinds of things.
That's right.
And there can be no forgiveness for that. The amends are made.
Absolutely not.
You know, until everyone lives at least to a certain standard, has, you know, enough to eat, has health care, has warmth in the winter, has coolness in the summertime, is respected as an individual, there can be no forgiveness.
Right. Until they're not having to stand outside the church and beg for justice day, every Sunday, until that happens, then no, forgiveness is not on the table at all. But I want to talk about the difference between forgiving and letting go. Because to me, there's a huge difference. But to most people, they say, no, that's the same thing. It doesn't feel the same to me at all. I can let go of what you did and let go of the repercussions of what you created in my life without ever having to evolve a thought about you and your own personal being. I can do that within my body. I can control my spirit. I can determine that I'm not going to cage myself in with the judgments you put on me every single day. All those are internal help that I can do with myself, and I can release each piece of what you created within me and turn it into something else. That, to me, feels completely different than the codependent feeling of forgiveness.
Right on.
All right. Go ahead, David.
Oh, you go, Alex. I was just agreeing.
Well, I'm agreeing with that also. I mean, that's kind of what I was talking about. That's where I go, I'm not going to think about that. If I, you know, I'm not going to be a hater. I'm not going to be preoccupied with this. I'm not going to think murderous, injurious things about people because it's not good for me. That's
but there's even
a
deeper level to it that, you call it suppression, but there's really another level of it that's even a release of that. Where the energy itself isn't compartmentalized, it's non-existent because you physically have had that energy leave your body. And there's ways to do that and skill sets to do that, where that person's energy that they put on you, that cloak that carries with you, can be laid down. But it takes a lot of work and a lot of serious willingness to look inside. But you can control all that.
Sure, you could do it. I could never personally do that with a living person who's capable of making restitution. But, you know, it depends on the person, too, I think.
Well, I don't think you have to have that person at all there. This is a solo kind of thing that can be done. Now, it can also be done. I've had some times where I've had forgiveness with a person that I was just livid with, and there's no way in hell I even wanted their name mentioned around me. And somehow, because of a honest dialogue where they really got it, all that energy and all that hate and all that fell away, and we created something different. But that doesn't happen often. It really takes two people with a complete shift of spirit for that to happen. But it can happen, and I have faith that that exists, but I don't believe it should exist and be played every single time.
Agreed. Agreed. You know, I'm going to play devil's advocate, and you're
going
to laugh. You're really going to laugh because when I say devil's advocate, something that Jesus said.
Okay. I didn't see this one coming either, but go ahead.
Okay. Let's say, I'm sorry, supposedly said, when he told his disciples to go and preach the gospel, they enter a town. If the town welcomes them, then they join the family that welcomes them. They partake in the meal, and they, you know, they help these people. But if they reject the disciples, then they are to go outside the gate of the city, take off their shoes, shake the dust off their feet, and take back their blessing of peace. Now, I have to play the advocate here because essentially, I that's the image that came to my mind with what you were saying, letting go. When I speak, you guys know me. You've read a lot of my stuff, my notes and my own personal blogs on Facebook. You know, if somebody listens and are willing to learn, you know, and to hear the truth and then work with that truth to make things better for all life on Mother Earth, awesome.
Yeah.
But if some say, well, you know what, you're a freaking idiot, you need to shut up, then I close the door and I say, you know what, get out. I don't need you. And then I focus my energy somewhere else. That's my way of letting go.
Right.
You know, you want to be an asshole? Oh, man, I said that again. If you want to be an asshole, be an asshole, but I'm going to go to where the message hurts so I can work with the relatives that want to work with me.
Exactly. There's another piece as well, especially when you're trapped in the family dynamic and you decide you want to keep them in your life, is acceptance of who they are, but that doesn't have to include forgiveness. You can, like, I accept there's a lot of things within my family that I'm going to see when I see them and that I'm not going to like when I see it, but I've come to a point in my life where I just know that's who they are. They're not going to change. That car is heading on down the road. But that's different. I can be around people who have done stuff because life makes you do that. But that in no way implies that I in any way find what they're doing acceptable. It's just life. Sometimes you have to stay in it even though you don't want to be.
Well, I think you're right. You know, I have a kind of three strikes and you're out rule with the family, and particularly people that have been kind of abusive or mean to me. Usually the first time someone will say something to me or, you know, that is kind of offensive or opens an old wound, I try to change the subject. The second time I tell them, let's not talk about this. And then the third time is I just sort of snap their little heads off. So, woohoo!
That's a good three-step program. I like it.
I like it, yeah, man.
You know, and look, they've had their warning. They know better than to, you know, than to get into a verbal argument with me. They're usually not going to win.
Wow. Now, I usually just remove myself as much as possible from people like that. So you do have to, as much as you possible in life, control the circle that you run in because that controls the energy that comes into your body. So just,
right.
You know, if somebody, it's really a very simple concept. If somebody makes you feel good, bring them into your life, and if they don't, let them go. You know, don't keep pulling them along. Don't keep hoping. The clock of your life is ticking. And the longer you drag them, the more you're eating up valuable time that you could be doing something else.
Yeah, and it's an extension of that, that if someone puts you in pain, there's no reason to have them in your life.
Exactly.
Right on.
Love should not hurt.
Put you in pain. And they do it malicious. They do it to make themselves feel better than you, or for you to feel smaller,
right,
or for you to be controlled by them. There's no reason to have them in your life.
And
you
those
know,
gut kicks that people give you, or they cut you to your core. They learn what's sacred to you, and then they stomp all over it just for fun. Those kind of people are toxic, and you just don't need it in your life.
Extremely.
I'd rather live.
Good point.
I actually had this thing say on my wall. It's like, I'm going to create a world where people don't feel like they can come for me, even if I end up being the only one in that world. It's at some point you've just got to accept, if I have to be alone in the woods to have people leave me alone, then I will go in the woods and pitch a tent, for God's sake. But I will find a place in this world where the energy is good and people aren't coming at me.
Well,
that's a hard thing to do.
When you talk about that, Mel, there's something that you see, we're dealing with two-legged issues here, and we're dealing with humanity. We're dealing with human nature. And when you find yourself in a world where it's just you in the woods, you're still surrounded by life, and you're still surrounded by the trees, and surrounded by birds, and surrounded by beautiful earth and sky. So, you know, we're still dealing with life, but what is it about humanity that makes it so hard? Which behooves the question, Alex. It's so easy to say, okay, who doesn't forgive? Who doesn't deserve forgiveness? Who can't we forgive? In your experience and in your work, Alex, what person would you say deserves forgiveness?
Well, I think that we've been talking about that kind of person, the kind of person who admits the wrong, admits the nature of the wrong, tries to make restitution for the wrong, and then never wrongs you again. I think the person that doesn't deserve forgiveness is the exploiter, the person who uses you, the person who thinks themselves better than you, wants to kind of put you down to feel better about themselves. I have no reason. I have no reason to have someone like that in my life.
Gotcha.
Man.
Gotcha.
They're dangerous to have in their life.
Mm-hmm. You know, right?
The other thing I want to touch on just briefly is I've seen people use getting saved in the church as a kind of restarting of the clock of all their sins, so that what they like the family. I'm telling you, I've seen it like so many times where the family has had it up to here with them. So they go to the church and they cry their eyes out and go up and ask for forgiveness, all this. And that, in the way, is supposedly supposed to make people restart the clock where everything that person did the 5 minutes before they got in church no longer can be held against them. And that now they're supposed to be reborn into this person. But the truth is nothing happened up there that was worth erasing the history. So that in itself, to me, makes people vulnerable because they supposedly don't have any right, because the guy who asked for forgiveness, who are you to supersede God?
Well, I heard their imaginary friends say, once again, I want an affidavit from Jesus and from Jehovah saying this guy is forgiven, and you better please don't hold it against him. I mean, please don't hold it against them. I'll consider it that way. But unless that happens, then it's just imagined.
Right.
Then it's just some kind of wonderful daydream they had.
And there's more that's required than that moment of guilt or that moment of clarity that you really messed up. There's actions that have to take place over a period of time. I'm happy that you had your little moment of getting the fact that you are miserable to be around, but that in no way is enough. you have to take that thought and carry it into a long progression of matched behaviors before
you
can even speak to me about anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little tough to get for giving this up sometimes.
Wow.
I have a lot of tolerance for it.
I think it was when Christianity really kind of ruled most of the world, because people were kind of expected to hold those kinds of values. And you know what? If you didn't hold a Christian belief, they'd burn you at the stake. So if you didn't forgive your friend, you'd be burned at the stake. You know?
Well, in that kind of case, I'd be a forgiven fool, because I'm just saying.
Or at least I'd say I was a forgiven fool.
Oh, absolutely. I forgive you, man. I forgive you. Just put the fire out. Put the fire out. Yeah.
That's right.
Hot dog. But you know, I used to work as a custodian for a church, and you know, I needed the job, and it was a job that was run by bid, and to make a long story short, I lost the job in a bout of nepotism, where you know, a favored child of a favored deacon or the treasurer got the job, you know, and. Since I'm not going to mention names, you know, it's a person with a criminal record, drug abuse record, all kinds of stuff. And you know, no, they were all afraid to tell me, hey, you know, Dave, you lost your job, until the week before. Then they said, oh, by the way, you lost your job. We gave it to a cheaper, we gave somebody with a lower bid. And after that, I was approached by a number of members of their congregation saying, oh, you know, when are you going to come back? We miss your piano playing, because I used to play piano for a couple extra bucks every now and again. And it finally got to a point where I was tired. I'm really tired of being asked, hey, when are you coming back? Oh, David, be strong. Come back to church. I said, you know what? If I go back to church, I'm going to go back powwow style. Oh, well, come back powwow style. I got to go back naked and take my clothes off. That stopped it. That was my idea of forgiveness. You know?
You're going to play Jerry Lee Lewis on the piano.
Exactly. Well, the look I got, it was kind of like, oh, would you? No, anyway. But you see, here's the problem. Stop it, David. But you see, this is the point that really blows my mind, because when it comes to forgiveness has become an excuse in my observation, where the church can offend people. Religion, which comes from two Latin words meaning to bind back, which implies a slavery, a bondage, for crying out loud. You know, I'm not a religious man, but I try to walk a spiritual path. But forgiveness has been used as an excuse. We cannot find any examples. Well, maybe we can find very few examples of people who say, Mel, please forgive me. Alex, please forgive me. Or David, please forgive me. And that we can point to and look at and say, yeah, bro, yes, sis, I forgive you. Because, like Nell was saying before, and this disturbs me, my brother and sister. This really, God, I felt like a preacher. You know, it really disturbs me, because we can't find many examples of a two-legged that lives that way, that offends somebody and says, oh man, I really screwed up here, and
right.
then works to change and works to make amends, and no, you are so right. It takes time. It doesn't take a day. It doesn't take a week. It takes time for that person to win trust back. There are
right.
very few examples.
But also, there's an acceptance that once you alter that initial energy and trust, that you're never going to get that same thing back. You'll get some kind of modification of it. But there is a level of trust that exists when somebody is never offended. That is a beautiful thing, and that should be valued. But we as society don't know how to value that. so we harm each other over and over again.
Yeah, it has to be in the relationship. Because
yeah.
the old relationship, trust, you know, the naivete that one goes into the relationship with is busted. And you can't get that back.
No. You create a second set of energy that is a whole new thing. But what would have existed is gone in that instant that you did whatever you did. And that piece is written forever, as far as I'm concerned.
Two words, Humpty Dumpty. Once it fell off, once it fell off, yeah, don't laugh. But once it falls off the wall, nobody could put it back together.
Right.
That is beautiful. That's deep. That's deep.
You can share it with Facebook.
But maybe they wanted scrambled eggs anyway, so what difference does it make? They didn't want it back together. They're trying to eat breakfast, for God's sake.
And so it's better when it's scrambled, you know?
I know. Exactly.
You know, rather than into a relationship, preconceived, you know, notions, you've got to forgive me and you've got to accept whatever I do and I can do whatever I want to you. And, you know, society and religion tells me that, you know, I'm entitled to that. You know, you're better off not having a relationship like that. That's the problem that I have with most very religious or very, very religious Christians. They sort of have this arrogance that somehow I'm better than you. You know, somehow I'm saved. Somehow I can pretty much do whatever I want to you. And, you know, I'm saved. I'm not perfect is what you hear, but I'm saved. But, you know, I hold them to different standards. I hold them to the same standards that I hold myself. And if they can't meet those standards, I might have to associate with them, but they're never going to be close. They're never going to be close friends, or they're never going to be close to me.
Exactly. But don't let somebody make you a target out of guilt or anything else. Listen to that inside voice. When you start hearing the conversation, if you start pulling back and everything and going like, well, I guess, and that whole confusion state, that's not a state to forgive in. That's a state to stop and go like, manipulation is beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And only a true forgiveness, you feel it in every inch of your body, you get it, you're looking at that person square in the eyes and you know they get it and you get it. That's when you begin the conversation and not before.
I do a strike three thing with guilt too, you know. Oh, after all, you got to understand that that's strike one. Well,
yes.
But, you know, when you're a little kid, and then that's strike two.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you don't forgive, God's not going to forgive you. Strike three, you're out. But I don't talk to the person.
Guilt is definitely a topic I would like to do as well, because society uses that as a weapon on so many people. And I'm trying to do everything I can to take away the weapons that beat these brothers and sisters down.
Right on.
Well, is there anything else you gentlemen wanted to add before we wrap up the show?
No, I think I'm pretty good. I really enjoyed talking to you all. Hope that what I had to say was helpful.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on.
Alex. Oh, yeah. We were able to laugh and joke about this topic today.
Mm-hmm.
But in all seriousness, you know, to all our friends listening to the show today, I want to thank Nell Cole for putting the show together and doing an awesome job as always.
Thank you.
Fantastic job, and Alex, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. You know, I don't think that we really were able to cover every aspect. It would be nice if we were able to forgive, but it is not always possible. And you know, we can be the most spiritual beings in the world, and still, you know, the concept of forgiving and forgetting is essentially non-existent. Because as long as abuses continue, I mean, we have children who are abused, and we have women who are abused, we have men who are abused, We have animals that are abused. We have the abuse of earth and sky and all in between. We have abuse going on continuously on Mother Earth. And it is hard to forgive. But what I'm hoping is that with people like Neil Cole and people like myself and Russ Letica and Alex and Nadine and this wonderful, wonderful lady who we had the pleasure of having a stage left show with, Annie O'Sullivan, you know, with people like us working together, I am hoping that at least we can work together to create a better world for all life. And with that, I'd like to offer a song, Nell. Would you like to hear a song?
I would love to hear a song, David.
I'd love to hear a song, too, David.
Yes. I hope.
Thank you so much, David. That was beautiful.
Thank you, Mel.
All right, we're going to wrap up another show. Thank everybody for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Everything's alright. I hide all of my feet.